Good evening, and thank you for sharing my story. This encounter still troubles me to this day. It was the summer of 2010, and I had recently turned 13. My family thought it would be a great summer for a cabin trip, a departure from my usual Boy Scout camp adventures. We embarked on a journey from our home in Florida to South Carolina, where my grandparents from Canada would meet us. The cabin we had rented was nestled in a serene location, offering a breathtaking view of the lake and even its private beach. My excitement knew no bounds as I was the first to jump out of the car upon our arrival. However, my initial enthusiasm was met with an encounter that would haunt me for years to come. As I explored the surroundings, I came across a man who seemed to be in his late 50s, the owner of the cabin. He greeted me with a warm smile that gradually morphed into an uneasy grin. This strange reaction caught my attention, but being a shy kid, I decided to move along and continue my exploration. My curiosity led me to a peculiar circular pit beneath the cabin. It was an unsettling sight, but it didn't initially bother me. I then spotted a treehouse under construction by the owner down at the beach. Ignoring his warning to be cautious, I ascended the ladder. The top of the treehouse was riddled with protruding nails, but I managed to find a secure spot to stand and gaze back at the cabin. The wood cabin, while appearing old, exuded an air of sturdiness. It boasted a spacious porch and outdoor storage underneath, where my attention was drawn once more to the enigmatic circular pit. It was unlike anything I had ever seen in the woods, resembling a colossal spinning ball dipped into the earth. I pointed it out to my father, and the owner, who was still present, casually remarked that a bear used to nest there but had long moved on. His explanation didn't sit right with me, considering the strange appearance of the pit. Shrugging off my unease, I entered the cabin and claimed one of the bunk beds before my siblings could. The initial days of our trip were filled with outdoor activities like hiking and swimming, typical summer fun. However, we knew that once our grandparents arrived, we would spend more time with them. On the seventh night, something unsettling occurred that would forever change the course of our trip. I was roused from my sleep by strange sounds outside. The shifting of dirt near the left side of the cabin caught my attention, where the trash bins were placed next to the kitchen door. I heard something pushing the bins around, and I assumed it was raccoons or some curious animal. Being a Boy Scout, it was my duty to shoo them away. I climbed down from my bunk, and as I did, the noises abruptly ceased. I noticed a few rays of sunlight streaming into the room, which struck me as odd. I made my way to the kitchen window to investigate, but before I could reach it, I heard long, scratching noises emanating from the walls of the cabin. It sounded as if long nails were digging deep into the sheets of a bed. Fear gripped me, and I slowly backed away from the source of the eerie sounds. Then, a powerful bang shook the cabin door, causing me to jump in fright. My brother and our loyal dog were the only ones downstairs with me at the time. My dog, sensing danger, raced towards the door, barking and growling as if ready to confront whatever threat lurked outside. This commotion woke up my brother, who acted swiftly. He grabbed me and handed me his hunting knife, his eyes conveying reassurance. He instructed me to make my way to our parents' room while he headed towards the door, flinging it open and stepping out. My dog followed, barking fiercely. The barks and running soon receded into the distance as I climbed the stairs and woke up my father. It took about 30 minutes for my brother and father to return. My dog was limping but had displayed remarkable courage throughout the ordeal. My brother, who had always been a brave and capable older sibling, now wore an expression I had never seen before, and one I would never see again. He was typically unfazed by getting dirty in the woods, but this experience had unnerved him to the core. With our dog's wound attended to, my mother and grandmother rushed him to the local vet. While they were gone, my father, grandfather, my oldest second brother and I inspected the cabin for evidence of the strange events. I stayed close to the cabin, still trembling with fear. The trash bins had been punctured with gaping holes, as if something had punched them open. Above the bins, the cabin wall bore deep claw marks, reaching about 6 feet from the ground. Amidst the eerie aftermath, I detected an unusual odor that didn't originate from the trash cans. My anxiety grew as I crouched down to peer under the cabin, where the strange pit had piqued my curiosity earlier. There, I discovered a gruesome sight. A dead fox, torn into shreds. I immediately alerted my father, and he, along with my brother, swiftly removed the remains using a shovel and disposed of them. My father contacted the cabin owner, who tried to downplay the situation but provided us with a flare gun and bear mace as a precaution. A few days passed, and my parents took the rest of the family to a nearby restaurant, leaving me behind with my oldest brother, who had chased the intruder previously, and our injured dog. An hour after they departed, I found myself gazing out of the second floor window in the direction my brother had run towards during his previous encounter. At that moment, I was petting our dog, who suddenly raised his head, alert and sniffing the air. I glanced outside and saw a monstrous, bear-like creature perched high in one of the trees. This creature defied typical bear characteristics. Instead of a rotund body, it possessed a lean, muscular physique, resembling that of a human. Its eyes were the most unnerving part, piercing and yellow, akin to perfect human eyes that locked onto mine. Fear surged through me, triggering a fight-or-flight response. My dog, sensing my distress, joined in by growling and howling at the window. In a state of panic, I turned and sprinted towards my brother's room, tears streaming down my face as I yelled about the terrifying beast outside. My brother, with a worried expression, told me, "This territory doesn't belong to us." He then rose from his bed, grabbed his knife and baseball bat, and descended the stairs. I armed myself with the flare gun and bear mace, preparing for the possibility of the creature breaking in and attacking us. Suddenly, a tremendous impact against the cabin's rear wall sent the entire structure shaking like a boat. My dog's barks and growls continued, and I could hear heavy breathing from outside, accompanied by objects being hurled at the cabin. A rock shattered one of the front windows and struck my left leg, causing me to wince in pain. Without hesitation, I turned and fired the flare gun out of the window. The bright burst of light followed by a chorus of profanities and enraged shouting. Then, abruptly, everything fell silent. My dog remained vigilant, growling and fixated on a corner of the room that lacked a window. I couldn't see what had captured his attention, but I could only assume that the creature was lurking there. Several minutes of tense silence passed before my brother and I decided to call the police and our parents. With trepidation, we ventured out the front door and cautiously made our way around to the right side of the cabin. A slow snarl emanated from behind a bush, and my dog inside went berserk, leaping and scratching at the door. My brother began shouting at the unseen creature and hurled his baseball bat in its direction. The sound of impact, however, didn't hit a tree. It struck the creature. It emitted a pained grunt before a massive, black, furry mass darted out from behind the bush and sprinted down the dirt road. We lost sight of it in an instant. Panicked, we rushed back inside the cabin, barricading the doors and retreating upstairs. Moments later, gunshots echoed in the distance, and my father's truck pulled into view. I flung open the door, and the rest of my family rushed inside. My father recounted that a large bear had been chased away, and he had fired a few rounds at it. The police eventually arrived, after some difficulty locating the cabin. We provided them with a story about an aggressive bear attempting to breach our cabin. That night we left, and my family often recalls the tale of how my son and my oldest brother bravely fended off a hungry bear. However, for my brother and me, the truth was far more unsettling. Upon our return to Florida, I retreated to my room, still shaken by the harrowing experience. My brother entered, locking eyes with me, and uttered the chilling words, "It looked human, didn't it?" I simply nodded, prompting him to elaborate on his earlier remark about territory. He explained that every animal has its territory, but when something bigger comes along and takes it, that's when things change. The memory of that encounter remains etched in my mind, and I can't help but wonder if the cabin owner knew more about the danger in the area than he had let on. It's a story I can't forget, a tale of a nightmarish encounter with a creature that defied explanation, and a lingering sense of unease that continues to haunt me to this day. A year ago, I had the opportunity to meet a fascinating man who would later become a close friend. Let's call him Jake to protect his identity. We both shared a military background, which naturally led to conversations about our past experiences. However, Jake had a story that was unexpectedly haunting, and when I finally got this channel up and running, I knew I had to share it with you. So, here we go. This story takes place on an undisclosed military base, deep within the damp jungles of a remote island. Jake recalls the wilderness being unnervingly quiet for at least a week leading up to the incident. The personnel stationed there attributed the silence to a change in seasons or something of the sort. There were rumors of bizarre sightings, fast-moving creatures that defied explanation. Anyone who dared mention these sightings was typically met with ridicule from fellow soldiers. These strange sightings were notably inconsistent with one another. Some claimed to have seen large, unblinking eyes, while others reported smaller ones. Some heard the thunderous trudging of a massive creature through the woods, while others described the sounds of something small and agile rustling through the underbrush. No one had seen anything worth defending against, let alone risking their reputation over. Jake, at the time, served as the desk sergeant, which meant he heard every report that came in. Anyone who saw or heard something unusual that could potentially impact the base's security would typically seek him out to have it documented and logged. He never took the more fantastical reports seriously enough to record them officially. Unbeknownst to the concerned soldiers who came to him, some of them just wanted to talk about their experiences off the record. These conversations often ended with them sharing ghost stories of their own. The night in question, Jake and his team were stationed on the far side of the island, an area completely uninhabited, with no human presence for hundreds of miles in any direction. This location had been chosen by the military for storing weapons and explosives. Jake had a partner named Barry, and their mission that night was to conduct nightly checks on the magazine storage areas, which were several miles deep into the uninhabited zone. As they drove slowly in their Humvee with the windows down, the jungle remained eerily quiet. The silence was almost comforting for their mission, which involved detecting any foreign intelligence operatives, or tampering with U.S. equipment, or dealing with the occasional refugee group that washed ashore. They were traveling along a narrow road that rested in the valley, between two imposing mountains, bordered by gigantic hills, thick with tall grass. Then, out of nowhere, they heard it, a heavy thud coming from the woods. It was a completely unexpected and unnatural sound that emanated clearly from the tangled growth. The first thud caught their attention, but it was quickly followed by other equally unsettling noises. Barry decided to shut off the headlights and the engine so they could stealthily approach whatever was out there. They knew that anyone attempting to navigate the dense vegetation would have to do so carefully, taking time to avoid injury. But what they encountered next was truly unexpected. Surprisingly, they could hear fast-paced footsteps, accompanied by rustling through the tall grass. After a few moments, the sounds began to move parallel to the road. They decided to restart the vehicle and pursue the noise. The walking continued for a while as they followed it, illuminated only by their running lights. Suddenly, it stopped. They thought they had lost track of whatever was out there, so they turned the headlights back on, assuming it might be a deer or some other animal. As Barry turned on the high beams, both men's eyes widened with shock and disbelief. Approximately 30 yards ahead of them stood a humanoid creature. The creature was over 2 meters tall, with a small oval head. Its movements were eerily swift for its size, almost reminiscent of an impossibly nimble frog. Witnessing this creature instantly sent a chill down Jake's spine, as if he had been punched in the stomach. His heart raced, and adrenaline coursed through his veins so rapidly that he began to feel nauseous, on the verge of vomiting. Jake later lamented the fact that neither he nor Barry had the courage to chase after the creature. The overwhelming feeling of being at such a disadvantage in the darkness was absolutely petrifying. They couldn't shake the unsettling notion that they might have become the hunted, with this mysterious creature having the tactical advantage in terms of position and mobility. In a panic, they turned their truck around and sped off into the night, leaving the creature behind. The woods remained silent for at least another week before returning to the usual droning sounds of the local wildlife. In the undisturbed heart of Georgia's wilderness, there's a piece of land that's been mine since the day I was born, passed down through generations since 1810. I often think about how the oaks and pines here have seen more history than any living soul. My property, a sprawling expanse of a few thousand acres, complete with a serene 260-acre lake, is the kind of place where the only neighbors are deer, coyotes, and the occasional eagle. My wife and I, we chose this life for the quiet, for the privacy, for a world that belongs just to us and our daughters. The sun was beginning its slow descent, painting the sky with strokes of orange and purple, as I sat on the porch, letting the day's work sink in. This land, it demands a lot, but it gives back in peace, in a sense of belonging. But recently, that peace has been different, disturbed by things I can't quite explain. It started with the knocks. Not the kind you hear at the door, but a distant, rhythmic thumping against the trees. I first thought it was just the wind or some animal, but the pattern was too deliberate, too human. Then came the rocks, small ones at first, hitting the side of the house in the dead of night. I'd go out with my flashlight, scanning the trees for some prankster, but there was never anyone there. But it's not just the knocks or the rocks. There's a feeling, a change in the air when the sun dips below the horizon. It's like the land itself shifts, becomes something older, something wilder. My wife feels it too. She's got that intuition, a sense of things that can't be seen. We don't talk about it much in front of the girls. They're only 5 twins, and the world to them is still simple, still safe. Just last week, I was out at the edge of the property, checking the fences. It was getting late, but I wanted to finish up. That's when I heard it first, the footsteps, heavy, deliberate. I've tracked deer, chased off coyotes, but this was different. It wasn't fear I felt, not exactly. It was an awareness that I wasn't alone, that something was sharing the woods with me. I stood still, listening as the steps seemed to circle, then fade away into the twilight. That night I started digging into the history of this land. There's an old family journal, leather-bound and worn, speaking of the Cherokee who once used these woods as a refuge. Maybe, I thought, there's an answer in the past, a clue to what's happening now. I don't scare easy. Life out here, it toughens you. But there's something going on in these woods, something that doesn't fit into the world as I know it, and I intend to find out what it is. The days on our land are filled with the usual rhythms of nature, the chirping of birds, the rustle of leaves, the distant calls of coyotes as evening approaches. But it's the nights that have started to feel foreign, as if the land itself is whispering secrets it's held for centuries. Last night was different, though. It was a night that etched itself into my memory, as clear and as sharp as a winter morning. My wife and I were sitting on our back porch, the one overlooking the lake. The sun had just dipped below the horizon, and the sky was a canvas of deep blues and purples. We sat there, like we often do, watching the day give way to night. But as the darkness crept in, the usual chorus of wildlife sounds abruptly ceased. It was as if someone had pressed a mute button on the world. In that eerie silence, we heard it. Footsteps. Not the light, familiar tread of a deer, but something heavier, purposeful. They crunched through the underbrush, breaking the stillness of the night. My heart beat a little faster, not out of fear, but a kind of primal alertness. I've lived in these woods all my life, and I know every creature that calls it home. But this was different. Then came the sounds that chilled my blood. It wasn't words, not in any language I've heard. It was a chanting, a guttural rhythmic sound that seemed to resonate with the very trees around us. My wife gripped my hand, her eyes wide. We've heard stories, old tales passed down through generations, but this was no story. This was real, and it was happening just beyond the veil of darkness that shrouded our view. I reached for my battery-powered spotlight, a heavy-duty thing that could light up a good stretch of the woods. But as I swept the light through the trees, there was nothing. No eyes caught in the beam, no movement. Just the trees and the darkness and the sound of that chanting. Then, as suddenly as it began, it stopped. The night returned to silence, save for the sound of our own breathing. We sat there for what felt like hours, neither of us willing to break the silence. The darkness felt different now, heavier, as if it was pressing in on us. The last straw was the rock. It came from nowhere, a sudden jarring thud as it landed on the porch near our feet. It was a big thing, easily 2 or 3 pounds. I picked it up, turning it over in my hands. It was just a rock, but it felt like a message. I bagged it, thinking maybe there'd be something on it. A print, a mark, something. I've dealt with trespassers, poachers, and the occasional lost hiker, but this was beyond my understanding. Something was happening on our land, something ancient and unexplainable, and I was determined to get to the bottom of it. The morning after the incident with the rock, I was up before the sun. There's something about the stillness of dawn that makes it easier to think, to piece together the puzzles that life throws your way. As I sat on the porch, coffee in hand, I knew it was time to delve deeper into the history of this land. Maybe the past held answers to the present. The family journal, a relic passed down through generations, sat on my desk. Its leather cover was worn, the pages yellowed with age. As a kid, I'd heard stories from it, tales of hardship and survival, but I'd never really dug into it myself. Now, it seemed, was the time. The journal spoke of the early 1800s, a time when this land was a wild frontier. It mentioned a Cherokee tribe that used these woods as a refuge. I'd always known about the Native American presence on this land, but I'd never connected it to what was happening now. Could there be a link between the past and these unexplained occurrences? The more I read, the more intrigued I became. There were mentions of sacred rituals, of a deep respect for the land and its spirits. The Cherokee believed in a balance, in a harmony between man and nature. But there was also talk of a darker side, of ceremonies meant to appease or ward off something. The details were vague, the words tinged with a superstitious fear that was hard to fully grasp. That afternoon, as I walked through the woods, the journal's words echoed in my mind. The land didn't feel just like mine anymore. It felt shared, as if I was walking through a history that was still very much alive. The whispers of the past seemed to rustle in the leaves, to flow in the streams. I turned to the internet, to the vast repository of human knowledge, and typed in cryptozoology. It was a shot in the dark, but what else could explain the footsteps, the chanting, the rock? The screen filled with tales of Bigfoot, of creatures that lived in the fringes of our understanding. I had always considered such things to be the realm of fantasy, but now I wasn't so sure. The idea of Bigfoot being real, walking through my woods, was both absurd and terrifying. But the more I read, the more the pieces seemed to fit. The descriptions of the creatures, their elusive nature, the way they were said to communicate, it all mirrored what I was experiencing. I didn't know what to believe, but I knew I couldn't ignore it. Something was happening on my land, something that defied easy explanation, and I was determined to uncover it, to understand it. I kept my findings from my daughters. They were too young, too innocent to be burdened with these questions. For them, the world was still a place of wonder and simplicity. I wanted to keep it that way, at least for a little while longer. As the day faded into evening, I resolved to explore the woods again. This time, I'd go further, deeper. I'd find answers, or at least I'd try. The land was speaking, and I needed to listen. The next day, armed with a sense of resolve and a backpack filled with essentials, camera, flashlight, some food, and water, my wife and I set out into the heart of the woods. The morning was crisp, the air fresh with the scent of pine and earth. As we walked, I couldn't shake the feeling that we were stepping into a story much older than ourselves, a narrative written long before our time. We walked in silence, our eyes scanning the dense forest. The woods were alive with the sounds of nature, yet beneath it all lay a hushed anticipation, as if the trees themselves were holding their breath. I couldn't help but feel we were not alone, that unseen eyes were watching our every step. As we ventured deeper, I kept an eye out for any signs, any clues that might shed light on the recent occurrences. Broken branches, unusual tracks, anything out of the ordinary. But the forest gave up little, its secrets well guarded. We reached a clearing where the sunlight streamed through the canopy, casting dappled shadows on the forest floor. Here, we paused, taking a moment to rest and gather our thoughts. My wife, always more attuned to the subtleties of nature, suggested we split up to cover more ground. I hesitated, the protective part of me wanting to keep her close, but I knew she was right. We agreed to meet back at the clearing in an hour. As I walked alone, the silence of the woods seemed to deepen. Every snap of a twig underfoot, every rustle of leaves, felt amplified. I found myself glancing over my shoulder, a primal instinct I hadn't felt since I was a boy. Then, about half an hour into my solitary exploration, I saw it, a series of deep, indistinct impressions in the soft earth. They were too large for any deer, too irregular for a bear. My heart quickened as I followed the trail, the camera in my hand now a lifeline to reality. The trail led me to the edge of a steep ravine, the ground falling away into shadow. There, perched on the edge, I saw something that defied explanation. A figure, large and looming, its back to me, covered in what looked like thick fur. It stood motionless, as if gazing into the depths of the ravine. I raised my camera, my hands trembling slightly. This was it, the moment of truth. But just as I was about to take the picture, the figure turned, and for a brief second, our eyes met. There was an intelligence there, a knowing, that shook me to my core. Then, in the blink of an eye, it was gone, disappearing into the thicket with a grace that belied its size. I was left standing there, heart pounding, the image of those eyes seared into my memory. I made my way back to the clearing, my mind racing. When I found my wife, I could see in her eyes that she too had experienced something profound. We didn't need words. Our shared look said it all. As we walked back home, the woods seemed to return to normal, the sounds of birds and rustling leaves resuming their chorus. But we had changed. We had touched something ancient, something wild, and in doing so, we had been changed ourselves. The land had spoken, and we had listened. And though we had more questions than answers, we knew one thing for certain. We were no longer alone in these woods. I had the opportunity to hear this chilling story directly from my friend Max during what started as a casual conversation, but quickly evolved into a gripping live interview. Gabriel had recently moved away from our neighborhood, and this was my chance to hear his firsthand account of a spine-tingling experience. As we delved into the realm of the unusual and bizarre, I couldn't help but notice a certain spark in his eyes, a passionate glimmer that hinted at personal encounters with the supernatural. Max, originally from Costa Rica, had spent most of his life there before immigrating to the United States. Intrigued by the unusual topics that emerged during our conversation, ghosts, vampires, dogmen, and glitches, I sensed there was a story waiting to be told. Max's eyes widened as he responded to my inquiry about whether he had ever experienced something strange. "Yes, I have," he said, his voice filled with a mix of excitement and apprehension. The tale he was about to share revolved around a dark night in San Jose, Costa Rica, when he was just 10 years old. He lived with his parents and older brother in a quiet suburb named Las Animas, aptly translating to the City of Lost Souls. Their home, a recently constructed one, was situated on a street with only two houses, separated by empty lots. Given the high crime rate in their town, Max's father, a metal worker, had fortified their house with steel doors, door frames, and window bars. Their small backyard was surrounded by walls to deter potential robbers, and guarding it was Rambo, their loyal Doberman. Rambo was trained to accept food only from Max's father, as local thieves were known to poison guard dogs in attempts to gain access to homes. There was an unspoken curfew for children after dark. If they were away from home and without parental supervision, they were expected to stay put to stay safe. One fateful evening, Max and his brother Miguel were visiting their friend Carlos, who happened to live in the only other house on their street. Time slipped away, and it was well past nightfall when they decided to head home. The debate about walking back ensued, despite both houses being well lit with floodlights. The daunting prospect was the unlit dirt road and knee-high grass that stretched for about 75 yards between them and home. Their mother, who typically waited outside to ensure their safety, was nowhere in sight this time. This absence added to the boys' apprehension, and as they continued their debate, she finally stepped out and waved for them to return. They started jogging toward home, bidding Carlos and his mother goodnight. However, as they turned back to look at their mother one last time, she had disappeared. In her place, across the street, in the middle of the field, stood a dog. The boys slowed down, their old tennis shoes scuffing the unpaved road as they tried to make sense of the situation. It was undoubtedly a dog, but it appeared far larger and more imposing than their Doberman Rambo. A thick chain was wrapped around its neck, and the eerie sound of metal rattling in the night air sent shivers down their spines. For a moment, they consoled themselves with the thought that it might be Rambo who had broken free. The brothers debated whether it was their faithful guard dog, but as they continued to approach, they realized this was something else entirely. The mysterious dog seemed to grow in size as they got closer, and it became evident that this was not their beloved Rambo. With hearts pounding, the two young boys froze in their tracks. Max looked at Miguel, whose expression revealed a fear he had never seen in his older brother before. They didn't know it at the time, but what they were facing was a hellhound, as we know it. The black dog fixated its ominous gaze on them, alternating between their house and the boys, as if acknowledging that a confrontation was imminent. It stood as an imposing barrier between them and safety. The boys realized that returning to Carlos's house was too far, and continuing down the road felt like certain doom. Their only chance was to retrace their steps. Turning back, they heard the front door of their house open, and their mother emerged, shielding her eyes from the floodlights. Fueled by fear, the boys sprinted toward her, their adrenaline surging as they ran harder than they ever had before to reach her. The hound's head snapped toward their mother, and it launched itself into the air, covering at least 30 feet in one terrifying leap before crashing to the ground. The beast began its relentless pursuit of the house, tearing through the tall weeds in the field. The metallic clinking of the chain intensified as it closed in on them. Somehow, they managed to reach their mother just in time, slamming the door shut behind them. Inside, their mother prayed in disbelief as the front door quivered from the furious blows of the enraged creature outside. After a few agonizing moments of terror, the noise abruptly ceased, replaced by a blaring car horn from outside the garage. Max's father shouted at them to activate the metal-clad garage door from inside the house. Miguel quickly complied, opening the garage door and earning a scolding from his father for supposedly letting the dog out. With trembling hearts, Max and Miguel cautiously opened the front door and looked around, finding no trace of the hellhound. As they continued their investigation, they discovered poor Rambo cowering in fear, hidden in a small crawl space beneath the porch stoop. As I sat in my studio, listening to Max recount this harrowing experience, his eyes welled up with tears. He confessed that despite all the mischief they had gotten into, it was the first time he had ever seen his big brother scared. The encounter with the hellhound had left an indelible mark on their memories, forever etching the nightmarish image of the hellhound into their minds. Max concluded his tale with a cryptic smile, saying, "You know what? I have another story for you. Have you ever heard of La Llorona?" I nodded, acknowledging that I had, but we both understood that the chilling legend of La Llorona would have to wait for another time, leaving me eagerly awaiting the next chapter of Max's spine-tingling tales. It's funny how some nights start so ordinary, you'd never expect them to turn your world upside down. That was how Halloween of 2022 began in Bolton, a quiet sub-district of Manchester. Around here, we don't really make a big fuss about Halloween. You know, just a few kids in makeshift costumes, wandering about with their little pumpkin buckets. That's about it. I remember settling down in the living room with my family that night. The TV flickered with the eerie scenes of The Exorcist, a classic horror movie that seemed fitting for the occasion. My mum had popped some corn, and my little sister was curled up under her favorite blanket, eyes wide with every suspenseful scene. Dad, as usual, pretended not to be interested, but I caught him peeking at the screen from behind his newspaper. Just as Reagan was about to do something particularly spooky, a sharp knocking sound cut through the room. It wasn't the front door, that sound was familiar. No, this was coming from the back door. Weird, I thought. To knock there, someone would have to get through our wrought iron gate, and that thing was always bolted shut. We all paused, the movie forgotten. The knocking continued, growing louder and more urgent. It wasn't the kind of sound you could ignore. I glanced at my family. Their faces mirrored my confusion. Dad finally set his newspaper aside, his eyebrows knitting together in concern. "Who could that be at this time?" Mum muttered, more to herself than to anyone else. I stood up first, a mix of curiosity and unease churning in my stomach. At 15, I was already 6 feet tall, thanks to the boxing training I'd started last summer. Not that I felt particularly brave at that moment. As I moved towards the kitchen, the knocking persisted. I peeked through the window, half expecting to see a neighbor or a lost trick-or-treater. But what I saw made my heart jump into my throat. Out on the lawn, something was moving. Something big, dark, and definitely not human. I stifled a gasp and stumbled back, my mind racing. "There's something out there," I managed to choke out, my voice barely above a whisper. My mum was at my side in an instant. "What is it, love?" she asked, concern lacing her voice. I pointed towards the window, struggling to find the words. "It's big. Bird-like, but not a bird. It crawled to the garden corner," I stammered. Mum squinted through the glass but saw nothing. "Are you sure?" she asked, sounding skeptical. I nodded, unable to shake off the image of that creature from my mind. We returned to the living room, where the knocking had finally stopped. Dad suggested it might have been some local kids playing a Halloween prank, but I couldn't believe that. What I saw wasn't human, and it certainly wasn't a kid in a costume. That night, I lay in bed, staring at the ceiling. Every little sound made me tense. I tried to convince myself it was just my imagination, a trick of the shadows. But deep down, I knew it was something else, something unexplainable. And the scariest part? I had a feeling it was just the beginning. Lying in bed that night, I couldn't shake off the image of the creature from my mind. It was like a scene straight out of a horror movie, but this was real life, and it happened in my own backyard. I tossed and turned, the unease growing with each passing hour. As dawn broke, I made up my mind. I had to find out what that thing was. I waited until the house was stirring, not wanting to alarm anyone with my early morning escapade. Slipping on my jacket, I grabbed a torch from the drawer and quietly made my way to the back door. The garden looked different in the morning light, less menacing than it had the night before. But the memory of what I had seen was fresh in my mind, propelling me forward. The grass was dewy under my feet as I walked towards the spot where I had seen the creature. I scanned the area, half expecting it to jump out at me. But there was nothing, just the usual array of bushes and trees. My heart raced as I approached the corner of the garden, the place where the creature had vanished. I could still feel the adrenaline from the night before pulsing through my veins. As I reached the spot, a sudden rustling sound from the bushes made me jump. I pointed the torch towards the noise, my hand trembling slightly. "Hello?" I called out, my voice sounding small in the vastness of the garden. No answer came, just the sound of the leaves in the wind. I took a step closer, the beam of the torch cutting through the dim morning light. That's when I saw it, a pair of eyes, reflecting the torchlight back at me. My heart stopped for a moment. It was here. The creature was huddled against the fence, its body obscured by the foliage. It was smaller than I remembered, about the size of a small child, but its features were unmistakable. The talons, the wings, the pointed face. It was all there, just as I had seen it the night before. I stood frozen, not sure what to do. The creature stared back at me, its eyes unblinking. It looked scared, almost vulnerable, but I couldn't shake off the feeling of danger. I took a hesitant step forward, the torchlight revealing more of its form. It was like nothing I had ever seen before, part bird, part something else. Just then, the creature spread its wings, a hissing sound escaping from its beak. I stumbled backward, fear gripping me. I wanted to run, but my legs wouldn't move. The creature's wings fluttered, and it seemed to grow in size, its shadow looming over me. Then, as quickly as it had appeared, the creature took off, soaring over the fence and disappearing into the trees. I was left standing there, my heart pounding in my chest, the torchlight now illuminating an empty patch of garden. I turned and ran back to the house, my mind racing. What was that thing? Where did it come from? And more importantly, would it come back? As I burst through the back door, my family looked up, surprised to see me panting and disheveled. "I saw it again," I gasped out, my words tumbling over each other. "The creature. It's real." But as I looked at their faces, I could tell they didn't believe me. They thought it was just a child's overactive imagination. But I knew what I had seen, and I was determined to find out the truth. As I sat at the breakfast table, trying to explain what I saw in the garden, I could feel the skepticism hanging in the air. My family exchanged glances, the kind that said they were humoring me, but not really buying my story. I couldn't blame them. Even to my ears, the tale sounded fantastical. A bird-like creature in our own backyard. But the fear I felt was real, the image of those glowing eyes etched in my mind. My dad, always the rational one, suggested it might have been an unusually large bird, perhaps an escaped exotic pet. My sister Lily laughed it off, saying it was probably just a Halloween prank by some kids from the neighborhood. But the more they rationalized it, the more isolated I felt in my conviction. I knew what I saw wasn't normal. It wasn't something that could be easily explained away. Later that day, I found myself at the local library, flipping through books on local wildlife and mythology. I was desperate for any clue that might explain the creature's identity. But the more I read, the more I realized how little we know about the mysteries lurking in our own backyards. I stumbled upon a book about medieval legends and folklore, and there it was, an image that made my heart skip a beat. It was a depiction of a gargoyle, eerily similar to the creature I had seen. The book described gargoyles as protectors, warding off evil spirits, but sometimes they were said to come to life. I shivered at the thought. Could such a thing be possible? That evening, I brought up my findings at dinner. I talked about gargoyles and how some legends spoke of them as more than just stone sculptures. But my family's reaction was predictable. They chuckled, dismissing it as another one of my wild theories. I could see the disbelief in their eyes, and it hurt. I felt like I was the only one taking this seriously. The following days were a blur of unease and frustration. I felt torn between wanting to prove what I saw and the fear of encountering the creature again. I spent hours gazing out into the garden, half expecting, half dreading to see those eyes staring back at me. But there was nothing. Just the ordinary, peaceful garden I had always known. At school, I overheard some classmates talking about Halloween pranks and strange sightings around town. For a moment, I considered sharing my experience, but the fear of ridicule held me back. I was the new kid in the boxing class, the tall, quiet one, and I wasn't ready to be labeled as the guy who saw monsters. As Halloween approached, I couldn't help but feel apprehensive. What if the creature returned? What if it wasn't alone? These thoughts haunted my nights, turning my dreams into a swirl of shadows and flapping wings. I realized then that some mysteries might remain unsolved, and some truths might be too strange for others to accept. But I couldn't let go. I needed to know. And so, I decided to keep watching, keep searching for answers, even if I had to do it alone. Because deep down, I knew what I saw was real, and I couldn't just pretend it never happened. As Halloween drew nearer, the memory of the creature I saw in our garden refused to fade away. My family seemed to have moved on, dismissing it as a product of an overactive imagination. But I couldn't. Every shadow in the corner of my eye, every rustle of leaves in the wind, brought me back to that night and the morning after. I was trapped in a loop of uncertainty and fear, with more questions than answers. Despite their skepticism, my family noticed the change in me. I spent less time with them, more time alone in my room, or wandering aimlessly around the house. My grades started to slip, and my boxing coach commented on my lack of focus. I knew I had to pull myself together, but the thought of that creature lurking somewhere out there made it hard to concentrate on anything else. I started to avoid the garden, especially as dusk fell. The place that once brought me peace now filled me with dread. My little sister Lily, who loved to play out there, asked me one day why I didn't come out with her anymore. I didn't know what to tell her. How could I explain that the garden no longer felt safe to me? Halloween night arrived, and with it came a sense of foreboding. I watched from my bedroom window as kids in costumes roamed the streets, their laughter and chatter filling the air. I wondered if they knew what might be hiding in the shadows, waiting, watching. My parents decided to hand out candy, keeping the tradition alive. But I stayed in my room, the lights off, pretending not to be home. I couldn't face the possibility of seeing that creature again. I felt like a coward, hiding away, but the fear was too much. Then, there was a knock at the back door. My heart stopped, not again. I heard my dad's footsteps as he went to answer it. I wanted to shout out, to warn him, but my voice was stuck in my throat. I waited, every second feeling like an eternity. Finally, my dad called out, "It's just some late trick-or-treaters." Relief washed over me, followed by a pang of guilt. I was letting my fear control me, affecting not just me but my family as well. The next day, I made a decision. I couldn't live like this, jumping at shadows, afraid of my own backyard. I had to face my fear, whatever it was. I stepped out into the garden, the autumn sun warm on my face. I walked to the spot where I had seen the creature, half expecting it to appear again. But there was nothing, just the familiar sights and sounds of home. Maybe I would never know what I saw that night. Maybe it was a creature from another world, or maybe it was just a figment of my imagination. But I realized that I couldn't let it haunt me. I had to move on, live my life without fear of the unknown. As I turned to go back inside, I took one last look at the garden. It was just as it had always been, peaceful and beautiful. And in that moment, I felt a weight lift off my shoulders. I was ready to let go of the mystery and embrace the world in front of me, with all its wonders and uncertainties. Life was too short to be lived in fear, and I was ready to start living again. It was one of those perfect Michigan summers where the air was just the right kind of warm, and the skies were a canvas of unending blue. I was 18, fresh out of high school, and ready for adventure. My name's Emma, by the way. I've lived in the countryside of Michigan all my life, but the thrill of exploring the wild still gets to me. This particular weekend was special. My boyfriend Tony, my older brother Brad, and a couple of our friends decided we'd go camping. Tony's parents owned this old cabin out in Ludington, surrounded by nothing but woods and a private lake. It was our secret getaway spot, miles away from the nearest neighbor. As we packed our bags with enough snacks to feed an army, and the kind of supplies only teenagers would think of bringing, I could feel the excitement bubbling inside me. I threw in my favorite hoodie, some jeans, and of course, my worn-out sneakers. Tony was in charge of the fun supplies, a cooler filled with drinks and enough weed to last us through the weekend. We were rebels in our own right, seeking a break from the mundane. We piled into Tony's beat-up truck, the back filled with camping gear, and set off. The drive was a mix of loud music, off-key singing, and laughter. Brad, sitting beside me, was his usual quiet self, lost in his thoughts. But even he couldn't resist the infectious joy of our little group. The cabin was as rustic as I remembered. Nestled in the heart of the woods, it stood like a relic of simpler times. We unloaded, claiming our spots in the dusty old rooms. There was no cell service out here, which was part of the charm. It was just us and nature, no digital world to distract us. As the sun began to set, painting the sky in shades of orange and pink, we started our bonfire. The crackling of the fire, the smell of burning wood, and the warmth against the cool evening air was enchanting. We gathered around, roasting marshmallows and sharing stories. It was one of those moments where you wish you could just pause time. Brad, who had been unusually quiet since we arrived, seemed a bit off. I nudged him, trying to get him to join in the fun, but he just smiled weakly and kept staring into the fire. I knew he had a lot on his mind with starting college in the fall, but I wished he'd let loose for just one night. As the night deepened, so did our conversations. We talked about our dreams, our fears, and the exciting, uncertain future that lay ahead of us. In the glow of the fire, with the stars twinkling above us, I felt a sense of peace and belonging. Little did I know, this tranquility was about to be shattered, and our little adventure would turn into something out of a nightmare. But for that moment, we were just teenagers, laughing and living without a care in the world. It was the kind of night that memories are made of, the kind that you look back on and smile. And as I looked around at my friends, their faces illuminated by the firelight, I felt grateful for this moment, this night, and this wild, beautiful life. The bonfire crackled and popped, sending sparks dancing into the night sky. We sat around it, the six of us, engulfed in its warm embrace against the cool night air. I remember thinking how the fire's glow made everything feel more intimate, more real. Laughter filled the air as we shared stories and teased each other. It was the kind of night you'd see in movies, perfect and carefree. Tony was in his element, entertaining us with his ridiculous impressions, while the rest of us lounged on logs and makeshift seats. The alcohol made our heads light and our hearts lighter. I sipped my drink, feeling the warmth spread through my body. It was one of those rare moments when everything just felt right. But then, I noticed Brad. He was usually the life of the party, but that night he was different, distant, and quiet. I nudged him a couple of times, trying to draw him into the fun, but he barely responded. His eyes were fixed on something in the woods, a look of intensity on his face that I had never seen before. It was unsettling. "Brad, what's up?" I asked, following his gaze into the darkness beyond the firelight. The woods were thick and dark, a wall of shadows and mystery. But there was nothing there, at least nothing I could see. He didn't respond, just kept staring. The others started to notice too, and the atmosphere shifted. The laughter died down, replaced by a growing sense of unease. Tony tried to make a joke to lighten the mood, but it fell flat. We were all watching Brad now, trying to figure out what had caught his attention so intensely. And then I saw it. At first, I thought it was a dog, silhouetted against the darkness. But as my eyes adjusted, I realized it was too big to be a dog. My heart started to race. "Guys, do you see that?" I whispered, my voice barely audible. The creature, whatever it was, stood unnaturally still. It was as if it was watching us, just as we were watching it. A cold shiver ran down my spine. This was no ordinary animal. The way it stood, the size of it was all wrong. Suddenly it stood up on two legs. That's when panic set in. This was no dog. It was something else, something I couldn't explain. It towered over us, at least 6 feet tall, its eyes glowing faintly in the darkness. We all saw it then, and the air was filled with gasps and muttered curses. The creature's lack of a tail was eerily noticeable, a detail that seemed to unnerve us even more. Tony's friend Mark let out a strangled sound, half gasp, half whimper. "What is that?" one of the girls, Jessica, asked, her voice trembling. Tony muttered something under his breath, something about it having no tail. Brad's eyes were wide, his face pale in the firelight. He looked more scared than I'd ever seen him, and that scared me more than anything. In that moment, my mind cleared, the alcohol's haze lifting as adrenaline surged through me. I remembered the stories my grandmother used to tell us, stories of creatures that roamed the woods, creatures that weren't quite animal and weren't quite human. Skinwalkers, she called them. The realization hit me like a ton of bricks. We were in danger, real danger. And as that creature stood there, watching us with its unnerving gaze, I knew we had to get out of there. But before we could move, before we could even process what we were seeing, the creature let out a sound. It was a scream, but unlike any scream I'd ever heard. It was otherworldly, chilling, and it cut through the night like a knife. In that moment, I knew we had to run. We had to get away from this thing, whatever it was. And so I yelled, "Run!" and the night erupted into chaos. My heart was pounding in my ears, a rapid drumbeat echoing the terror that gripped me. The scream of the creature still hung in the air, a haunting sound that seemed to freeze us all in place. But it was my own voice, yelling for everyone to run, that shattered the paralysis. We scrambled up, tripping over each other in our haste to get to the cabin. The darkness of the woods felt suffocating, as if the trees themselves were closing in on us. I could hear my friends' panicked breaths, their feet pounding against the ground. I was running blindly, fueled by adrenaline and fear. Brad was ahead, leading the way. He kept shouting something in our native language, words that I didn't understand but sounded like a prayer or a plea. His voice was strong, determined, a stark contrast to the fear I felt. We reached the cabin, and I've never been so grateful for a door in my life. We piled inside, slamming it shut behind us. Brad was moving quickly, turning off all the lights, his movements methodical and deliberate. In the dim moonlight filtering through the windows, his face was a mask of concentration. He pulled a small pouch from his pocket, spilling its contents, a grayish powder, into his palm. He started at the front door, sprinkling the powder along the threshold, then moved to each window, repeating the action. I realized it was ash, something I remembered our grandmother using in her rituals. "What are you doing?" Tony whispered, his voice laced with fear. "It's to protect us," Brad replied without stopping his movements. "It's supposed to keep evil spirits away." I watched him, a mix of awe and fear churning inside me. I had always known we came from a family with deep native roots, but I'd never seen anything like this. Brad had always been the skeptic, the one who laughed off the old stories. But now, he was chanting, his voice steady and sure, as he moved around the cabin. The rest of us huddled together, too scared to speak, our eyes wide and fixed on Brad. The cabin felt like a sanctuary, but also like a trap. We were safe for the moment, but the creature was still out there, somewhere in the darkness. After what felt like hours, Brad finished his ritual. He pulled out our dad's pistol, checking it before setting it within arm's reach. The sight of the gun, a stark reminder of the danger we were in, sent a fresh wave of fear through me. No one slept that night. We sat in silence, listening to the sounds of the night, jumping at every creak and rustle. The reality of what had happened, what we had seen, was too much to process. It felt like a nightmare, but I knew it was all too real. As the first light of dawn crept into the cabin, I looked around at my friends. Their faces were drawn, pale, their eyes haunted. We were all changed by what had happened. The innocence of our carefree camping trip was gone, replaced by a harsh, terrifying reality. I knew we couldn't stay there. We had to leave. Get away from this place. But as we began to pack up in silence, I couldn't shake the feeling that this wasn't over. Whatever we had encountered in the woods, it wasn't going to let us go that easily. The first light of dawn broke through the cabin windows, casting a pale, eerie glow on our exhausted faces. The events of the night, surreal and terrifying, seemed like a bad dream now. But the fear in everyone's eyes told me it was all too real. I was the first to stir, my body stiff from sitting against the cold, hard floor all night. Brad was still awake, his eyes red and weary, the pistol lying dormant in his lap. The ash he had sprinkled around was still visible, a reminder of the nightmare we had lived. "Morning," I mumbled, my voice hoarse from the tension. No one responded. The cabin was filled with a heavy silence, the kind that comes after a storm. We were safe, but at what cost? Tony was the next to move. He stood up, stretching his limbs, his face etched with worry. "We should go," he said, his voice barely above a whisper. No one argued. We all knew we couldn't stay here, not after what had happened. Packing up was a silent affair. We moved mechanically, each lost in our thoughts. The fun and laughter from the previous day seemed like a distant memory. Now there was only the urge to leave, to escape this place that had turned from a haven into a horror scene. As we loaded the car, Brad took a moment to look back at the cabin. He mumbled something under his breath, a final farewell, or perhaps another prayer. I could see the weight of responsibility on his shoulders. He had protected us, but I knew he was thinking about what could have happened. The drive back was quiet. The roads, once welcoming with their promise of adventure, now felt ominous, as if they were hiding secrets in their bends and curves. Every shadow in the woods seemed sinister, every rustle in the trees a potential threat. At some point, one of the girls, Sarah, broke the silence. "What was that thing?" she asked, her voice shaky. But no one answered. Some truths are too frightening to speak aloud. We reached home in the early hours, the sun high and bright, a stark contrast to the darkness we had left behind. My parents were surprised to see us back so early, but didn't press for details. They could see something was wrong, but I wasn't ready to talk about it. None of us were. In the days that followed, we all tried to return to our normal lives, but something had shifted. The carefree spirit of our youth had been replaced by a sense of vulnerability, a knowledge of the darkness that lurked just beyond the light. I still think about that night, about the creature in the woods. I've done some research, talked to my grandmother about the legends of our people. She believes we encountered a skinwalker, a being of immense power and danger. She says we were lucky to escape with our lives. I haven't gone back to the woods since then, and I don't think I ever will. Some experiences change you forever, leaving scars that are invisible but deeply felt. That weekend was supposed to be a fun adventure, a memory to cherish. Instead, it became a lesson in respect for the unknown, for the mysteries of the world that are better left undiscovered. As for my friends, we've grown closer in some ways, but there's also a distance now, a shared trauma that's hard to bridge. We don't talk about that night, but it hangs between us. A silent acknowledgement of the fear we faced, and the unspoken questions we all have. What was that creature? Why did it come to us? Will it ever come back? These are questions I don't have answers to. Maybe I never will. But I've learned to respect the unknown, to understand that some things are beyond our understanding. And sometimes, the best thing you can do is walk away and be grateful for the escape.